Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the May 2nd meeting of the Ferndale City Council. Let's all stand together, and our Public Works Director, Kevin Rentz, will lead us in the salute of our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. We will begin with the roll call this evening from our city clerk.
Councilmember Zark.
Here.
Councilmember Hansen.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Taylor.
Here.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Birch.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here.
All here and present and accounted for. We will not have public comment. This is your time to speak to the city council and to the community on any item that is not on the agenda. If you see the item on the agenda, we'll have time for that later. So if you'd like to speak to us, come to the microphone, introduce yourself, tell us where you live, and we would love to hear from you. Go ahead, sir.
Papa John, still Malloy House, 6072 Malloy Avenue. And I'm here for a couple reasons. I want to do this quickly to help my friend Keith stay in the competition for the next year's Curmudgeon of the Year Award. So I need to do some puns, one of his favorite things. And one is that a day without sunlight is, you know, night. And you know how you make antifreeze? And the answer is steel or blankets. And then one more quick one. Nobody, if you think nobody cares, try missing a few payments. And then a couple of food for thought. The journey is not the destination, and you are not intended to be much more, you are intended to be much more than a dash between dates. So it's food for thought there. But you should have in front of you, hopefully, a map of an intersection. So several of you who are new to the council don't know, but several years ago, I came to the council for the very purpose I'm coming again now, tonight, which did me absolutely not one bit of good whatsoever. I am a pedestrian, and I would urge each of you to go, and I've done this a couple of years ago, I would urge each of you to, on foot, walk across the bridge east and go through this intersection to the other side and see if you can do it unscathed or with your nerves intact and check all your body parts to see if they're still there. And then walk back for twice the fun. Here's the point. They're at Main Street at, I keep forgetting the name of the intersection.
Hovander.
What is it?
Hovander Road.
Hovander, thank you. At Hovander, when you're walking to the east, I don't know if you can show up on this map very well, but it does actually. If you'll look, if you're heading east now, and you turn right, the crosswalk is around the curve. So people who are coming from the east, I mean the west, heading east, and turning there, cannot easily see the pedestrians. So what we have to do, if we're like our body parts, is look around the curve and hope that we are fast enough to dodge the next car that comes zooms around that corner, because they do. They don't slow down one whit. In fact, they seem to speed up around that corner. And then when you cross it, you have to look for traffic going west underneath that bridge turning left at the same time, and traffic turning right, heading now east, at the same time, because you have to kind of judge all of this when you're walking, and if you're allergic like I am to tire prints on your forehead. There is one exception to that, and that's New Year's Eve, if it's a good year. But otherwise, I don't like tire prints on my forehead, and particularly I don't like it when they're studded tires, because I don't know which holes were already there and which they put in my head. But that's this intersection here is not, I know I have no idea of all the FAM bus, maybe perhaps, well, we can't, but we should, but blah, 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 blah. But it seemed to me like one very easy to do temporary kind of solution is to put up a three-way stop. Okay, so the cars can alternate coming into, onto Main Street from the south, whereas now it's Russian roulette. You can get your finger in front of the other, just like it does when I first learned how to drive in Washington, D.C. The right-of-way was established by whose fender got there first.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. And Public Works Director Rentz, do you want to take that now or bring it back to a committee later on, in the next committee meeting?
You know,
up. Dragging things all over the place. I will agree, it's a terrible intersection. And it's one of the ones that's on the list of potential project improvements for the 20-year plan tonight. I don't know that that's any kind of a short-term solution with that, but I understand that it is a problem intersection, and not only from a pedestrian standpoint, but from a driver standpoint.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, it's a bad intersection for any multitude of reasons. So,
well, I'm not volunteering to be killed there, incidentally, but somebody's going to. It's that dangerous. And it bothers me a lot when people who are much less, I'm incapacitated to a degree, but there are some that have it a lot far worse than I do. I don't know how they get across there. It's just that dangerous.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Councilmember Goodrich.
Would the flashing lights like we put at the library or something like that be something to look at or to think about putting in so that you push the button and the people get some sort of warning that there is a crosswalk in that area? I don't know how, with the being on the curve, if that would work, or, you know, to give people some sort of warning. It's something not to, I don't expect necessarily the right answer tonight, but, I mean, we got that one in at the library relatively quickly, you know, considering some of the projects that we've done here at the city. And that, to me, has been a great addition to the safety there at the library. And I was just wondering if there'd be possible to do something simple like that here to give people warning that there's somebody thinking about walking across.
Yeah, I don't know without looking at it. I mean, you know, it's a complex intersection for a number of reasons, with the turning movements, the angles that are coming in.
But we don't even have a pedestrian warning sign there. There's no sign on Main Street at all indicating that there's a pedestrian crossing there, which multiplies the hazard even more. Plus, we could use law enforcement parking around that curve, nailing people who come zipping around it, because they do. They just don't look.
I took Papa John up on his challenge when he came here a couple of years ago to go walk that.
I saw it.
You know, firsthand that, you know, as a pedestrian, you don't see anything coming around there. You know.
Try it. See what you think.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Anyone else want to speak to the City Council this evening? Come up to the microphone. Seeing none, we will now go on to the consent. Oh, I'm sorry. Mrs. Goldsmith, welcome.
Good evening, Council. I'm Yvonne Goldsmith. I live at 5840 Church Road, and I have a question. I finally walked over to the sign that's on the corner of my lot, our lot, to read it, and it's talking about the city finishing up the water project on Heights and on Scenic. And I think it's Scenic. Anyway, are we going to be notified, those that have the property on that area? Is there going to be a meeting? What's coming out? What's going on with it?
I'm having a hard time with this thing tonight. You're referring to the Central City Water Consolidation Project.
Yes,
and so when the Church Road project went in, we cut into part of the Central City system and then took over we entered into an agreement to take ownership of the Central City system, both the well and the members that are on that system. We're currently in the process of switching over, doing the design work to switch people over to city water in that area.
Right.
So that's what you're seeing up there is the SEPA notification sign. We had one public meeting that was in conjunction with the Central City Association meeting a couple of months back. And so we had that one. As soon as we choose a contractor for that job, we're going to have another public meeting, and it'll be announced that we'll let everybody up in that area know when it's happening. That's a Central City Water Association member.
Okay.
So.
And we have a website set up.
We do. There's a
cityofferndale.org/UCWater.
Okay, and it's a great road, and I have met more new citizens walking up and down Church Road than in the 28 years or however long we've lived here. Very nicely done. But we were also told when they were going to do the road, they were going to take and make it more visible all the way down, and there's still that blind spot coming up that almost by our home. So when we go to pull out of our driveway, we think it's clear, and it's not. So... just it didn't turn out with the smooth vision.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm, if those of you in the audience are curious about the integration of the Central City Water, we have a whole frequently asked questions page set up at cityofferndale.org/GCWater.
Thank you very much. Anyone else want to come up and speak to the council? Seeing none, we are at the portion of adopting the consent agenda, and I would request, if there are no objections, that we put the naming of the street, remove it from consent, since there's a lot of interest in that tonight. We'll make that C1. With that exception, is there a motion to adopt the consent agenda? Councilmember Olson.
I just wanted to explain the resolution setting the public hearing for proposed. We're not voting on anything. We're not adopting anything. It's just that we're agreeing to follow the procedure on it. So it's in case people are wondering and just thinking that we're giving it away, we're not tonight. And with that, I'll move for consent agenda to be approved.
As amended.
As amended?
Yes.
Second? It's been moved and seconded that we adopt the consent agenda with the one item moved to regular session. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We will now move on to the introduction of new staff members. We have a few. I'm going to start with our public works director. He's in good form tonight. You have a new. We have a new staff member.
Yeah. Public Works Director Kevin Grins. Wanted to bring forward Jason Farrar.
Up Jason. To the front, sir. You are part of the family now.
So Jason is working as a public works inspector, goes out and inspects the private projects that are going on in the city. So anytime there's a development that's going in, the city infrastructure that's put in place as part of that project needs to be inspected by city crews. So anything that goes in the road, he's out inspecting sewer lines, storm lines, water lines, and the roads themselves. So he's got quite a lot of work to do here in Ferndale. Jason came to us from Skagit County. He was employed down there on the survey crew and spent 11 years working for Skagit County. I had the pleasure of working with him while I was down in Skagit County and was very pleased that he came up to Ferndale to work up here.
Great. Would you like to say something, Jason? Okay. Well, we're glad to have you. Get a picture. You got a kid's picture there?
Yeah, there you go.
And then in our courtroom, we have a new person, and Faith Miller is here to introduce our new staff member. Faith, we're glad you're here, and welcome Tammy Smith. Is Tammy with us somewhere? Okay.
Thank you.
Come on up, Tammy.
My name is Faith Miller, and I'm taking over from Shirley Zimmerman, who was here last council meeting. We presented the board to her, and she was retiring. And Tammy Smith is going to take my position as court clerk. So I'll move up to court services manager, and she will be the court clerk.
Very good. And Chief Knapp, we're going to keep you busy today. You have a new front office person. Let's start with her.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to introduce a new employee. She started 5 weeks ago. Her name is Harj Olick. I can have her come up. Harj started, as I said, 5 weeks ago. She was the unanimous choice of a panel of independent professionals from law enforcement agencies throughout the county. I think she was the number three candidate, and when she finished her interview, the panel said it is not necessary to interview any further. This is the perfect candidate. She was born in Vancouver, British Columbia, and she is a certified human resources professional and holds a BBA degree in human resource management. She worked as an operations coordinator in the security department for the second largest airport in Canada, where she managed 300 people. She threatened to take my job because I only had 20. With her interest in business administration, coupled with an interest in criminology, she believes her job with the Ferndale Police Department is a perfect match, and so do we. When you come to the window of the Ferndale Police Department, you will doubtlessly meet Harge, who will service you. You'll want to be nice. Otherwise, you'll meet her husband. And he is a big fella.
Oh.
So he Malcolm Harge, and please join me in welcoming.
And Chief Knapp, if you would stay up front, sir. We have some SCOPE officers this evening. Chief Knapp? And we'll just keep you busy here. I know you want to get to your cake, so this is exciting, too.
Thank you. It's nice to see you so soon.
Yes, indeed.
The SCOPE began in 1999, and today one of its original members, Marshall Voigt, continues to volunteer his time to support public safety in our community. The SCOPE officers volunteer hundreds of hours annually. Tonight, Marshall will be joined by three new colleagues. All will be enforcing the handicap parking restrictions, traffic control at special events, speed monitoring, house security checks, bicycle recovery. And all this because of the donated labors of these dedicated citizens, and that many of these tasks would not be accomplished at all but for these wonderful volunteers. I will also mention that since I last introduced a new SCOPE officer to you, we lost one of SCOPE's original members and the sergeant of the SCOPE team, Tony Birdsall, who passed away from cancer. Later this evening at a reception at the police department for the newest SCOPE officers, we will formally appoint a new SCOPE sergeant. He's here, and it's Don Hubbard. The three new SCOPE officers, the first will need little introduction. Paul Ingram, accompanied by his wife Barbara, is a former council member. He's a chef for the community meal, a veteran of the United States Air Force, current commander of Post 154 of the American Legion, and a good friend. Paul, would you just stand so we can acknowledge you? Thank you very much. Brenda Sordello and his wife Donna, current manager of the Portal Creek Park, a member of the Knights of Columbus St. Joseph Catholic Church, a veteran of the United States Air Force. He hails from Louisiana. He's been a Ferndale resident for the past 26 years, and we welcome him as well to the SCOPE. And lastly, we have Jerry Ward and his wife Petty, a 20-year veteran of the United States Navy, where he was an anti-submarine warfare operator with over 5,000 hours in the Navy's P-3 Orion aircraft, before completing a second career with Boeing Aircraft as a senior avionics instructor for the 747-400. If you would stand, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief. What a robust and exciting SCOPE program, and thank you for your leadership in creating a culture of service and safety in community. But I'm going to have you come up one more time, Chief. We have a special evening. There's a Bono YouTube song that talks about streets with no names. We have a couple streets without names, and we're changing that tonight. And Chief Knapp, you've taken a lot of interest in this project, so would you share with us a little bit about that, and then we'll entertain a motion from council to make that change tonight, which eventually leads to a dedication and a more formal ceremony down the road here.
Ferndale is an unusually patriotic city. You can tell on holidays you'll see the avenues lined with American flags and the POW flag. We have two genuine heroes here in Ferndale. First, Joe Mosher, who just passed away. Everyone knew him. Everyone loved him. That's Joe's picture over there. What a handsome man. And if you, before you leave, you can look at the poster. It tells a little bit about his service. He was a P-38 pilot. And during one sortie, a concealed anti-aircraft cannon hidden in the woods in France opened fire, and he went down. And he was held in captivity at Buchenwald when no one acknowledged that American flyers were actually being held in concentration camps. An unusual gentleman. He was one of 14,000 POWs. He was fortunate in that he made it out. 14,000 POWs died in enemy captivity. He made it out. When you look at the enormity of World War II, there were 407,000 people killed in action. Every what, 9 out of every 1,000 people who joined the war effort as a fighter perished in that war. 60% were drafted, but 40%, like Joe, volunteered to go into the service. This is the greatest generation, indeed. The other hero is Dick Stone, and everyone that has gone to high school here remembers Dick Stone. He was a counselor. I absolutely love the man, as does everyone else. And both Dick and Joe were very close, as their families will tell you. They were joined at the hip, and it was only right that the mayor conceived the idea that there shall be two streets named after these gentlemen. And that street is unnamed now. It's the one that goes into Hagen's and Samuels, L.A. Samuels. And on the south side is going to be Joe Mosher.
I believe so.
And on the north side, it's going to be Dick Stone. Lane or...
Lane. And Chief, just, it's the Walgreens, not the Hagen's, but...
The Walgreens.
Nearby.
Yeah. Nearby, close. Yeah. And that is going to be voted on tonight.
As soon as you're done.
And there will be a formal...
Unveiling.
Unveiling later on.
And, Chief, that's tentatively the Friday before the Memorial Day weekend. We need to confirm that, but we're shooting for the Friday right before Memorial Day.
If you know these two gentlemen, I'll tell you one quick little story, just how revered they were. Two Christmases ago, during the Christmas celebration at Pioneer Park, both the gentlemen showed up in their red POW tunics, just like Joe Mosher's.
Mm.
And Ellie Samuel donated a fireplace, a couple of easy chairs, and we put together a sort of a living room scene on the second floor of the museum so that people could come and talk to these two gentlemen. They lined up the second floor, down the stairs, up the front stairs, out into the park itself, waiting to greet these two gentlemen. We're so proud, and it's been a highlight in my life to have met and got to know both of these gentlemen.
Thank you, Chief. And I want to thank the family and friends for coming tonight, and I would love to entertain a motion from council to make these changes.
I make the motion.
It's been moved and seconded. Councilmember Birch made the motion. Councilmember Goodrich made the second. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the street naming, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It has passed. The ordinance has passed 7-0. Congratulations, family. Thank you very much. I think at this time the scope officers are leaving. Is that correct? That's just fine. And let's just take...
Regret that we can't sit
for
the whole council.
We'll just take a 30-second pause here before we move on.
Mr.
Thank
Mayor.
Thank you for coming, folks.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Would you mind introducing the newest planning commissioner since he's here?
Yeah, we can do that. I was going to do it at the end, but we do it now.
Who's Amber Alert? Does someone have their phone on Amber?
It's an Amber Alert.
Different. Mine's not going off this time.
Okay, let's bring ourselves back to order. Mr. Bullis, would you come forward? We're going to do this a little earlier here.
It's not spoken.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's got the hugs back there.
The salmon going upstream back there.
I know.
Pressing the flesh.
One of the things that council just did on the what's called the consent agenda is it appointed a new planning commissioner to replace a member who had to step down. So we are very pleased to introduce him. Victor, why don't you come up? This is Victor Bullis, very well qualified for his volunteering. The kids know him. He's on the Booster Club. He's a businessman. He's lived here forever. Loves this community. A very smart guy and just the ideal commissioner. And we're glad to have you. I want to welcome you to the Planning Commission, Mr. Bullis.
Thank you.
Would you like to make a speech?
Oh, no, no, thank you. I've made speeches before.
There you go. Thank you so much. Thank you, Victor, for stepping forward. Appreciate that. Moving on here, we have three distinguished guests. As I'm looking out in the audience here, we have the entire 42nd District contingent visiting with us tonight. And do you guys all want to come up at once or just to you? Is Doug here? Oh, my goodness. Well, we'll take it to you. Representatives Vincent Byes and Luann Van Weerman are up. Come up and talk to us and tell us what you're doing for us. Why did we send
it?
It's all about Ferndale. Of course it's about Ferndale. You have the business here.
Yes.
Good to see you.
Representative Luann Van Weerman, and it's such a pleasure to be here. And I already know so many of you, so it's just a thrill. So we have we had a very successful legislative session, and in particular for the city of Ferndale. And so we, of course, the very first news is that we got word today, and you might have already heard this, but the deal with Intalco is final. Intalco has accepted the BPA offer, and so we are going to keep Intalco open for another 2 years. And I'm just so thrilled about that. I'll kind of take the business side of things. And then maybe you could talk about, you know, some of the other things on the list. But I want you to know that our family built a business in Ferndale Ready Mix. And this is a very business-friendly community. And I just want you to know that from our family, we really appreciate the openness that you extend to us. And so it has been a great place to build and grow, employ hundreds of employees over the years, family-based jobs, and so that we appreciate, you know, the openness that you have. So this last week, I got to tour a new business in Ferndale, Rockwood Realty, mm-hmm. and had the ribbon cutting, and so I'm excited about that growth. And then, of course, next week, Friday, is another grand opening, and that's Touchstone Behavioral Health Clinic. And they have one in Blaine, and they are now moving to Ferndale. And they specialize in behavioral health issues for young people. So this is a very good thing for Ferndale School. So anyway, with that, I thank you. It's such an honor to serve you, and I'm just happy that we could be here tonight. So.
We're honored that you came. Thank you. Representative Byes.
Well, thank you. As she said, I'm Representative Vincent Byes. I'm representing the 42nd District. I'm from Linden. But I always appreciate Ferndale. Some of the big things that we've been working on, I think, that are very important, as Luann mentioned, was the Intalco process, or the plant. And this is something that I've been working on for a number of years. One of the big things that we were working on 2 years ago, before we even got news of the potential for a curtailment, was recontinuing the sales tax preference. And I think it's very telling when we're in committee and some of the questions that people ask about, you know, is this tax preference needed? And they say, well, this is going to cost the state of Washington about $13 million in tax preferences, in lost taxes that come into the state if we do this reduced tax rate. And they say, you know, what is the, you know, potential loss to the state if we don't do this, or what is the potential, what could happen if we don't do this tax preference? And it was very blunt, and I had to say, if we don't do this tax preference, it's very, very clear that Intalco may close. And then the state doesn't get any of the tax revenue that comes off of the Intalco, and we lose 500, 600 jobs out there. And that's not something that we wanted to see happen. And so from my perspective, I see a $13 million tax reduction to the state is well worth it in the grand scheme of things, because we are keeping much more tax money coming into the state by keeping Alcoa here. And this was, as I said, before the curtailment. So that was our first push, was to make sure we got that. It definitely was disappointing when we got that through, and then Alcoa came and said, we still think we're going to have to shut the plant. And so we, Representative Van Weerman, Senator Erickson, myself, worked very, very hard to make sure that we got every barrier we could get out of the way in order to make sure that Alcoa was willing and able to stay. Alcoa. This is not Alcoa's only plant in Washington State. It is one of two. The other in Wenatchee is not having the same fate that our plant is going to be having in staying open at least another 2 years. The Wenatchee plant is closing for good. They're keeping it. It's in curtailment, but there's, I think, about 15 employees that are there basically doing just security and that sort of thing at the facility. But they do not expect that one to be coming back online probably ever. So that is a fate we did not want to see for Whatcom County, and we have been pushing and want to make sure that we can do whatever we can into the future. And one of the things that when we heard about the potential curtailment, you know, we know over by the freeway there's a development that's coming into Ferndale, a large retail development, which won't be named yet. I know who it is, but I can't tell.
Spoilers.
Yeah, exactly, spoilers. But one of my first things is this is very bad timing for a large retail store to be coming into Ferndale with the potential loss of about 500, 600 jobs. And the ripple effect that losing Alcoa would have for our community in not only the lost jobs out there, but in the lost opportunities for tax generation and just that retail sales to happen in Ferndale. You know, that, and that's just one store, let alone all the subcontractors that work out there, the contractors that supply the suppliers out at Intelco. So those are things. We were able to get another $3 million, which was another one piece of the puzzle for the Alcoa. We were able to get the $3 million for worker retraining through Bellingham Technical College. One of the things, I think most people in Ferndale know that when the curtailment notice went out, there were a number of people that were very close to retirement who decided to take that retirement option that then left Alcoa about 15 members short of having a full crew in order to operate their plant. When they decided to extend the curtailment out a couple months, those people had left and they needed new people to come in. And so I think this is a great opportunity to get fresh people employed and fresh people job training. And so that's what that $3 million is going to be used to do out there is to get those other people trained. And then the other big thing that I think we were very excited for Ferndale was the Thornton Road overpass. Just coming into town any evening, everybody I think here knows that traffic is a nightmare coming down Main Street. We've heard about from the pedestrians side of things and just from the traffic anywhere on Main Street during rush hour is not fun. And it's a safety issue, getting people off the freeway, off the on-ramps, or off the off-ramps, and to the destination is very important to do. It was not without any costs, and your friends to the north in Blaine are not thrilled because we did have to take it from a project that they were hoping to get up there. But I think what it comes down to is prioritizing. This was a priority because it was a safety issue, and it was getting that traffic flow moving versus the development of an intersection that is not within the city core and is not necessarily a safety issue for pedestrians or drivers. So, you know, we're in the legislature. One of the things that we have to do is make those tough decisions, and it is not a decision that's fun to make. But we do have to prioritize where we spend those money, and safety is obviously going to be one of our higher priorities when we're looking at those projects. And along with that also, you know, we work with the COG, the Council of Governments, and the Council of Governments, along with all the other municipalities within Whatcom County, develop that transportation plan, and they were in support of what we were looking at doing, and they came down with that plan in mind as well. And so working with the COG and the other municipalities, we were able to get some of these things changed around. So
Vince and Luann, things in Ferndale aren't just political, they're personal. So you may or may not, listen, my daughter just gave us our second grandchild. Her husband works for Intelco. His dad works for Intelco. So this stuff like this really matters to us. So we appreciate it. Council, would you like to ask questions of our representatives? They're not here very often. You get off easy here. We want to thank you. We have some letters to send with you expressing our gratitude. You have served us well, and we are very grateful. And let Senator Erickson know he's always welcome to come as well. Thank you for being with
us. Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Very successful.
Well, now it gets more exciting. We have our Community Development Director, Yora Burnett. This is a public hearing on commercial zoning districts. And do we read the instructions after?
After,
okay?
Yep.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. Yora Burnett, Community Development Director. We do have a zoning text amendment for you to consider tonight. Chapter 18.44 is our commercial zoning district chapter. It was adopted in 2009, and what we have found is since that time, we really haven't utilized this chapter very much. So we're proposing to remove a number of the elements within the chapter that were confusing or outdated. This will not change our policies as far as they're associated with the items that are to be removed. One of the things that we are proposing that would slightly amend policy is to clarify a definition in the definition section of this chapter to make it clear what is and what is not a public agency. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Of a technical nature, Councilmember Watts.
I'm wondering, on page 64, item H, it says, at the request of the applicant, the community development director may waive the requirements of this section when he or she determines that the proposed development of the site is the size or intensity to satisfy the intent of this section without subsequent development. Can you just give me an example? I'm trying to understand when that might happen.
So that section refers to the requirement for a planned unit development or a binding site plan, mm-hmm. which are different methods of subdivision. This is generally associated with commercial or industrial development. The thought was when we put the original section in that if you had a relatively large property, let's say it's 15 acres, and if you wanted to put in a small coffee stand right in the middle, that is not the most efficient use of that 15 acres of property, and that we would require that they go through a planned unit development or a binding site plan process to identify other future uses that could go around it.
Okay.
Let's say, however, that we're talking about a 5-acre piece of property, which is about 200,000 square feet, and you are proposing a combination of stores or one store that would occupy half of it, and then your parking would occupy the other half. We could determine, gosh, you're not going to develop this more than that. You've now really maximized your development. We could then waive the requirement of going through a subdivision just to go through a subdivision.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions of staff? Seeing none, we will open a public hearing, which is required because we are changing our Ferndale Municipal Code. It will open at 63, I can't read the time, 6:37 and change. And our city clerk will read instructions as they relate to a public hearing like this.
A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you were unable to sign up before the meeting, you will be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name and address for the record and will be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group. Can we sign up?
I apologize. There's someone who signed up to speak. I'm assuming it's for this matter. Crowder? Let me do it this way. Would anybody like to speak on the zoning change? Please come forward. Introduce yourself. I think this must be for something else. Not a problem. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing part at 6:39. And, Council, what is your pleasure this evening? Councilmember Olson.
I'd like to move Agenda Bill 1605-002 for approval.
Second.
It's been moved in and seconded to adopt the change to the code. Any questions, comments? Seeing none, all in favor of the ordinance change, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It is passed 7-0, and the Ferndale Municipal Code, Section 1844, has been amended. And, Mr. Burnett, since you're still up here, Once you go on to item F, which is an ordinance related to fee code amendment sidewalk dining fees.
Sure. A bit of background. Until last year, the city of Ferndale did not allow the use of its sidewalks for sidewalk dining or many other things, or at least the code was silent up until then. The council determined that last year it was appropriate to start to allow businesses in the downtown core to utilize the public sidewalk for sidewalk dining. And as we went through the process, a fee was established that was in hindsight on the high side of what other cities charge for similar types of uses. And this year, the city council has heard from a number of businesses who say that that fee is actually preventing them or would be an obstacle to them pursuing sidewalk dining. So we are proposing to council, we looked at different cities, and really we could go anywhere from $0 for a sidewalk dining fee up to around $500 is what we've seen. You can pick anywhere in the middle of that or any extreme, and just let you know and remind you that on July 5th we are coming back to you with possible changes to the code itself, to the municipal code itself, that would perhaps change the dynamics a little bit, perhaps allowing other sorts of commercial development in the public right-of-way in the sidewalk. And that's it. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions of staff. Councilmember Wilson.
I have yet to hear a fee amount from you that would cover your costs.
What we are proposing is, since each one is different, that there would be a standard fee, and I'll get back to that in a second. There would be a standard fee, and then there would also, for those businesses that are proposing a permanent change to the sidewalk, for instance, drilling in a hole or putting up some sort of permanent fixture, the city would charge $100 per hour for review, a minimum of 1 hour. That would recoup city staff time to go out and investigate, and that would vary from project to project. As far as the static fee, we haven't processed one yet, so we're not certain precisely how much staff time it would take. Conceivably, it could be as simple as the city saying, don't obstruct the public right-of-way, remove everything at the end of the night, demonstrate that you've provided insurance to indemnify the city, and we could be done.
We already have that right now, and there are people doing that right now for free. So how does that change that example that you gave? aren't we talking, or don't you want to talk about the ones that leave it there overnight? Because, as we've discussed before, this is not inclusive. This is covers one thing, and the people that pick stuff up in the middle of the night, that's another thing. And there is no charge at all for anything.
Our hope would be that if the council does wish to modify the fee structure, that those folks who might be pursuing these sorts of endeavors without paying would recognize that it would not be cost prohibitive for them to now come into full compliance by paying the fee and allowing us to review it.
Okay, well, I'm going to wait for some more questions from the other.
We'll take questions from council. We have audience members, but whenever you want, we can have them speak. Councilmember Goodrich.
I wasn't finished.
I
won't support it. I think we're putting the cart before the horse, but unless we hear some other questions, that answer that, I can't do it because we don't really have anything set in place. So it's hard to set a fee for something we have no idea. That's just my personal opinion. Thank you.
Councilmember Birch.
You were before me.
He was referring to you, and I'm happy to do that.
Well, the $15 to $300 annually that's on Exhibit A, is that that's an application fee, or is that an annual fee that they would pay?
At this point, staff is leaving it entirely to council. Right now, we have the initial application fee, and then there's an annual redo.
Mm-hmm.
To be perfectly frank, I think that the mechanism that was adopted last year is not that popular. And so we're looking for some direction from council as far as what you would like to see.
Okay. Well, I would start the bidding at, say, $35 with zero application fee, and that would be an annual fee of $35. I would suggest another license, a separate license, for them to tap into their annual license as a business of maybe $5. And then the $100 minimum, I just don't see where normal restaurants that just set up two tables and four chairs or one table and two chairs would need to be charged $100 just to come. You've got the measurements. They've got their measurements. I don't see where you would have to visit each and every business.
Wasn't that a review for a permanent structure, though? That's a,
right. Permanent, but...
So you're okay with this people permanently...
Right, if they're doing drilling into the sidewalk and stuff, yes. Permanent structures, yes.
That they would be reviewed?
Yes.
At the $100 an hour, okay. So could you try that again, like as a motion? Because I'm trying to track with you. Don't have an opinion on it yet, but make it as a motion.
Are we ready for a motion?
I think she was making one. Wasn't that a motion?
No, I'm just asking questions.
Oh, excuse me. I apologize. I thought you were heading towards a motion. Any more comments or questions? Councilmember Goodrich.
I'm having a hard time supporting this. It seems like we're kind of halfway doing something. It's kind of like we're going to do this part tonight, and then we're going to come back in a couple months and do another part of it, but we're not really sure what the other part is. But yet we want businesses to start sidewalk dining, but we're really not going to give them the guidelines of what they can do or planters or things, because that's going to come in a couple of months. So, you know, to me, if we had brought a whole package, you know, together saying, okay, you can put planters out in front of your business, they can be 24 inches, they can, or you can do this type of thing, and here are the fees, then I can support it. But to leave a business, you know, to do this on the fees, but then say to a business, yeah, you might be able to put planters out, but we won't tell you until July if you really can't, you know, and stuff. So I'd like to have seen the whole package with everything brought to council all at once and just do it then. So as far as the fee change tonight, I'm not going to support it because I don't think it's fair to businesses to say, here's your fee, but we're not going to tell you what you're paying for.
The mayor just want to remind council, you do have an ordinance in place that is theoretically functioning. It's already there, and it's working or not working. So the item tonight is on fees, I believe. Councilmember Taylor.
I actually got online, and I did some research on sidewalk dining, and Seattle has a pretty good structure in place. Although they charge $500 when you sign up for a permit, I think $35 is a little bit low, but I would go with it just because we want to promote economic development, and as Roger Brooks put in his recommendations for Ferndale, we want to encourage outdoor dining. And we do have things in place right now that I would totally support, and if we're going to review it again in July, I think it would be a good start for us to, with this warmer, beautiful weather, it would be so nice to have the outdoor dining here in Ferndale. So I support it.
Thank you. Councilmember Williams.
I was going to echo what Councilmember Taylor said, that you know, this is the time, right? Right now restaurants are, you know, are looking at doing outdoor dining, and if we wait until the middle of July, they've lost the vast majority of their summer business, or at least the potential of that. And so I think, you know, waiting really, you know, effectively puts this off for another year for them, especially those businesses that simply aren't willing to pay the nearly $400 fee right now. Mm-hmm. With that, I would make a motion to lower the fee to $25 annual fee. We say, as a city, we're open for business. We want to encourage business. I think that gesture indicates that we are trying to encourage restaurateurs to bring it out on the sidewalk.
Second that motion.
It's been moved by Councilmember Hansen and seconded by Councilmember Taylor to reduce the fee to, for sidewalk and dining, is what we're talking about, to $25. Is there more discussion? Councilmember Hirsch.
Okay, are we grouping the planters or bicycles in front of your shop or clothes racks for a clothing store? Are we grouping that? Does that belong with the sidewalk dining?
That's in the council. Mr. Burnett.
We received direction from council committee clarifying that the sidewalk dining ordinance applies only to sidewalk dining, and that planters or other things that may be on the sidewalk or might not be are not subject to it, provided that nothing can obstruct American with Disabilities Act clearance in the sidewalk.
Councilmember Watson.
I guess I'm curious for Mr. Hansen, the $25 annual fee, are you imagining a renewal fee?
Yeah, $25 a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's so the way that's the way the motion is, to be a $25 initial fee plus $25 annually?
Yes.
Okay.
So can I just, is this what your council member Hansen moved to reduce the fee for a permit for sidewalk dining to $25 annually?
$25 annually, correct.
Okay, that makes more sense. Thank you.
Councilmember Olson.
I think she was first.
Oh, hey there.
Hi.
Councilmember Zahar.
I was hoping to clarify as far as if they're attaching something permanent to the sidewalk, if they're going to be, that just wrapped it all in, or? As
I would understand it, that's that gets into the $100.
We're still going to have that
separated. Yeah.
Thank you. Would you like to hear from guests? Oh, Councilmember Olson.
I still want support now, so he's added to what we have, so did you get that part? I know you just thought it was, like the rest of us, it was a flat 25. So now we're going to add the 100 for the inspection only to permanent.
For permanent.
Correct.
It's 100.
Okay. I still won't support that because if we don't recover our costs, then the taxpayers of the city have to pay for all that, and I don't think that's right. So I still won't support that.
Councilmember Watson, please.
I am going to support it. I know we're not going to get back all of our money, but I think this is one of those things we just want to incentivize. We would like to have more people eating outside downtown, so we're not going to recoup our costs. But, again, it's just an incentive, and we'll see how it works. If we have too many, if we have 50 people that want it, then next year we'll have to think about it. Although I would love to have 50 restaurants.
And then you have sales tax from 50 restaurants.
Yep.
Councilmember Taylor, did you? I thought you had. Councilmember Goodrich.
I'm still concerned about the fact that we're talking about changing this all in 2 months. And you have a restaurant owner or somebody comes in now, pays their fees, goes out and buys their tables or whatever.
I think you're getting feedback from his mic. If you turn his mic away.
Does whatever. And then we do some other changes, which we don't know what the changes are going to be. And now if this restaurant owner could be out the cost of whatever they bought. And stuff, and so that's what bothers me is the fact that we're kind of leaving them up in the air, saying, "Yeah, go ahead and pay this fee. We'll use the existing code now for another couple of months, but then we may change the rules entirely on you in 2 months,
or we
may not." You know,
Councilmember Watson,
I don't know.
I didn't think we were revisiting sidewalk dining. We're going to discuss sidewalk dining tonight, make our decisions, and then we're going to revisit other stuff on the streets. We're not going to revisit sidewalk dining in a month, are we?
That was precisely my understanding as well. We looked at all of the codes throughout the West, throughout the United States, really. We think that we came up with a good ordinance where the weak spot, there might be some tweaks, but the weak spot evidently was the fees. Mm-hmm. And we'll probably find out others if we do get people participating in it to see where we were weak. $25 annual renewal allows us to look at it and say we made a mistake last year. We won't permit that same thing to happen next year.
Councilmember Hansen?
I was pretty much going to echo what Councilmember Hirsch.
Great. Councilmember Hirsch.
Well, I have a question for Councilmember Goodrich. The exorbitant fees that restaurants would be facing, are these new businesses or existing businesses?
What do you mean?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Whether they're going to go out and buy outdoor dining tables and chairs on the hope that everything else is going to work out fine. Would it be an existing restaurant that's going to go and purchase?
I would assume we're talking about existing restaurants that are doing this outside dining. I don't know of anybody new that's coming in or whatever.
The leader building.
But it would apply to both, I guess. I was just under the impression in the committee meeting that there was going to be additional changes to this code that would affect the restaurant owners. And I know we are at committee, we were talking about planters as well, and that aspect of it. So I was under the impression that there was going to be more changes to it than including the outside dining aspects of it. That's why I was concerned with the fact of, well, why are we changing this, letting people go out and do something if we're going to change it here in 2 months on it?
Okay. We're just going to do dining tonight, and then we'll do the other stuff. So we won't touch dining again if we decide to do this.
Yeah, right. Councilmember Watson is correct.
That wasn't the impression I got from the committee meeting.
Okay. That's a good question.
There would be more stuff.
Yeah. Would council like to hear from the audience at this point? And what's interesting is some of them do not own restaurants, which I thought was kind of interesting. We would, at council's pleasure, like to hear from you. You have 3 minutes to share. If you would like to come up and share, we don't bite, usually. Come up and introduce yourself and tell us what you think about what we're doing tonight regarding sidewalk dining. This is your chance. Come on up, Cleo.
My name is Cleo Calland. I don't have a dog in this fight, but I do like to go to restaurants that serve meals outside and sidewalk dining and all that sort of thing. It just seems to me like you're just making a really big deal out of something that's maybe not such a big deal. I mean, how many restaurants are going to be wanting to do outside dining in Ferndale anyway? Maybe half a dozen, I'm guessing. I don't know. So one of the things that bothers me is, like, I pay my taxes, but then there's a fee. But that's not a tax, that's a fee. So we're paying Yori and this group to manage the city's business. This is like a half a dozen restaurants maybe going to want to put in some outside dining. Can't they just absorb that and go on with it and just say, look, guys, here's the safety things you need to be concerned about. You got to leave 48 inches or whatever it is for pedestrians to pass by. You do that, you're good. I mean, it just seems like we're making a great big deal out of something that maybe shouldn't be.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Anyone else wants to speak to council tonight? Mrs. Goldsmith, welcome back.
Yvonne Goldsmith, 5840 Church Road. And I concur with you, Leo. Absolutely. Having been a restaurant owner, ice cream shop owner, and bakery, it always brought more people in when you were serving outside. And I just think it's wrong. It's kind of like years and years ago when I served on the council, and there was a vote to tax the air for cell phones, and it passed 4-3. I wasn't one of them. I think it's stupid. And I don't understand why the city needs a little bit of money when those businesses bust their butts to make a bottom line and stay in business. I just think it would also encourage people to come to Ferndale when they see business. And what's the city's, we're business friendly, let's keep it business friendly and not tax and fee friendly.
Thank you, Mrs. Goldsmith. I think we're on a roll. Now, anyone else want to come up? Mm-hmm. You don't get many chances like this. Thank you, public, for being here. Council, we do have a motion and a second. Is there more discussion? It is to Councilmember Watson.
I apologize. Just a clarification on the motion. It's $25
annual fee,
which makes it a renewal fee as well. But it's also, if you're going to make permanent modifications to a public sidewalk, it is $100 per hour with a minimum of 1 hour. Is that correct, Greg? Is that what you were thinking?
That was what I was thinking, yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure what I was voting on.
What I'm pleased about, if this passes, it does bring the restaurants into the city to make sure they have insurance, that they comply with ADA and things like that. There are some important city considerations here, which I believe this fee change doesn't change any of that. And we do want them to come downtown so we have public safety in mind. Any other questions, comments before we take a vote? Are you ready for the question? The motion is to reduce the fee to $25 annually. If a person is to put in a permanent structure, it has to be reviewed by the city at a minimum of 1 hour, $100 an hour. I believe that is the motion. Is that what you intended, Councilmember Hansen? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
I believe that was two no's. That was five yes. Council members Olson and Goodrich voting no. The motion has passed. The fee has changed. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Council.
Very, very good. And we move on. Councilmember Goodrich.
This came up at committee meeting. I don't know if it's a procedural thing, but they talked about just adding the fee to the business license application and things. So when they did their business license, then they would have that fee. Or is you going to do some other tracking of this? I don't know. This is something that I just popped into my head about that came up at a committee.
It's a good question. I think that we'll probably figure out a little bit as we go. We have separate application forms for sidewalk dining, and I think that initially we would say, you want to do sidewalk dining, fill out this form, it's $25. Possibly for the re-ups, where I'm doing it exactly the same as we did last year, possibly we'll work with the finance department and have a little check-off for that.
And the mayor will ask staff to do it in the most lean way as possible for everybody. One-stop shopping. Thank you, Councilmember Goodrich. Going on to item number G, the hiring of a Public Works Capital Project Inspector, whatever the heck that is, and our Public Works Director, Kevin Rentz, you're on deck again.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I'm going to invite Katie Ratter, our Project Manager, to come
yes,
up.
Yes, thank you.
Katie deals with all of the capital projects that are going out, managing those projects from initial design on through construction and closeout. Public Works is coming forward to request the addition of one Public Works Capital Project Inspector. When a project is developed, we utilize design consultants, and I see one of them sitting out in the audience today. Call out Luis, who's here. But we utilize firms like Reichart and EB or Wilson Engineering or any number of engineering firms to develop a project. And then we go forward with construction, putting that project out to bid and entering into construction. Once the project goes out to construction, inspections are done to ensure that the work is done per plan. And typically with a project, we'll have an inspector that's on site working there with the contractor, verifying the quantity of materials, excavations, the slope and grade the infrastructure is installed to. Like I said, verifying the proper materials are installed, daily reports, photographs of the job site. Right now, we utilize contract inspectors to do all of these services. So when we go out for a project, we'll do a request for qualifications for an engineering firm to come in and provide a capital project inspector. They'll come in and do the inspections, and we see that with this process, we have different inspectors for each one of the projects, and also that at times we get junior inspectors that don't have the required expertise or knowledge of city infrastructure and city standards to produce a high-level project at the end. So what we're asking for is to bring that capacity in-house, to have one capital project inspector that will work with the projects. Katie and I developed a staff report that lays out a little bit of the case for that, and
Project manager Katie Ratter.
Project manager.
Your
Katie
turn.
Ratter. No, what I was going to say was, we would like to bring on a capital project inspector. It seemed that we could take on a number of the projects, although not all projects that Public Works does every year would be inspected by an in-house inspector. We'll still be utilizing outside firms to do projects. One of the ones within the staff report that I keyed out was the Church Road project. And a project of that size or scope will typically always be done by outside forces. When we had the Church Road project, I don't know if you had two inspectors with that project.
We had two inspectors, and then I would make a habit of going out on the field and checking on the contractor, checking in with the inspectors, and talking to the contractor, making sure that everything was moving forward, because it was such a big big job, a lot of coordination, a lot of adjacent property owners.
Yeah. So looking through in the staff report, I pulled out the cost summary for 2014 and 2015, looking at the kind of expenditures that the city had for consulting or the outside consultant project inspectors. And if we take out those church roads ones that are, you know, clearly outside of the scope of what we would do in-house, we look at 2014, we spent $79,000 for outside consultants to perform those functions. And then in 2015, we did $94,000 worth of outside consultant labor doing that. It seemed that by bringing that in-house, we would have a cost savings. We could potentially do about 50% of the projects with in-house inspectors, and then also utilize that same inspector during the off-season for the development of plans and the vetting of those plans when they come in. And I think Katie can talk about kind of the workload, and I don't know if you noticed what Katie had been doing since she came in, but she's looking over a set of plans in the corner waiting for her turn to come up and speak tonight. But that's one of the functions that we would be looking to utilize this person to do, is that review of the plan sets, going out in the field and verifying field conditions, making sure that the plans are fully vetted before we go out to bid.
Right. A large part of the developing some of these or all these projects is, you know, you go through an RFQ process, you get a consultant on board, you send them on their mission, go out and collect survey data, go out and start doing some design. And they do that, and they supply it back to the city. And so basically I fill the role of looking at what they put together. I ask questions. I question them about what about this, what about that. Have you looked at this particular water line? That sort of thing. And the city, you know, we're growing, and we've always been a city that's taken on a lot of capital projects. And the number of projects that we've got going on the horizon and the scope of those, I'm really not able to keep up to the extent that I think you folks are expect of the department. You know, I'm always pretty happy to stand up here and go, you know, you gave me an allowance of X number of dollars, and I spent, you know, much less than that and was able to deliver a project to your guys' high standards. And so with that extra, the extra workload, we're looking to just have some help in-house. Like Kevin said, it's a lot of effort that goes into reviewing plans and looking at stuff, because when you put things out to bid, you want to have a complete set of plans, because you're going to pay for mistakes. It's much cheaper to change mistakes on a piece of paper, because you can just, you know, wad it up, throw it out, draft it over. When you get out in the field and you have a contractor on board, if you find a mistake, not only are you paying for that mistake, which, you know, you're paying to redesign it, which you'd have to pay for anyway, you're also paying for the contractor's time to stand there and wait for you to come up with a solution so they can keep moving forward. So that's a big part. I don't really, you know, I come up and I give capital project updates, and that's not really kind of an attractive, sexy thing to talk about, I guess, is all the review that we do. But that is probably the largest part of these projects. So we're looking for some help as well.
Councilmember Bursch, and then Councilmember Taylor.
My biggest concern is the general fund and being able to pay for a full-time inspector, in addition to hiring the outside inspectors as well, because the one inspector can't do it all. So if
I'm going to ask our treasurer, we've reviewed that a bit, and with certain assumptions, we've come up with some possible budget impacts. Mr. Peterson, do you want to? Eventually, going to be asked anyway.
I'm going to pass this to the Public Works Director in terms of his estimate on how much of this person's time would be able to be allocated to these projects and or support to the utilities.
So as I had indicated, I believe that we would be able to see a reduction in the outside consultant, but not eliminate the outside consultant. With that, the off-season and on-season workloads are quite different, with the inspector being, you know, potentially out in the field full-time during the construction season, but then in the office during the off-season. The development of those projects is very time
intensive, and it's our estimation that, or my estimation, that between 80 and 90% of that person's time would be taken up with or billable to those projects. So I believe that the impact on the general fund would be small, and that it would be billed out to water, sewer, and the other projects.
So, Mr. Peterson, you can give us this one. Assuming a 10 to 20% remaining cost of the city, roughly what would that add to the budget?
10% staying in the general fund would be probably about 10 to 12 grand a year.
Thank you.
Pretty much noise level.
Councilmember Taylor.
I was actually going to ask Mark to provide us an update on, because he sent us all an email regarding this, and some of the notes that you wrote in your on the paper.
Over budget.
And I have to take responsibility for that. Mark and I did not get a chance, or I did not get a chance to talk to Mark fully before this went forward to committee. So Mark was working with a larger expectation of division of the labor between the general fund and the project-specific costs. So I think that it's our intent, as you know, Katie works with the projects. She's billing pretty much 100% of her time to the projects, and it would be seen that the inspector would be consistent with that, billing the majority of their time to the projects. Like I said, in that 90% range would go to the projects rather than the off-season thought that that would be a general fund-footed expense.
Councilmember Olson.
None of what I say is directed at you. Why did this go to the streets and utilities? Aren't all personnel matters usually in finance and admin? And then to send it to that particular committee without even finding out if it can be funded, I mean, you've already fallen on your sword for that one, but that should be a mistake that's not made again. It's, I reviewing what Mark sent out, I don't see how all these numbers are going to come together. I don't see these particular savings. Every year, for at least 8 that I know of, we keep hearing about hiring in-house. We actually have done it a couple times, only to lay that person off when it got too slow or the recession hit or something. And it just never works out monetarily where it's supposed to be. I hate hearing that we're going to start charging funds and you possibly utilize our slush fund again, forget something else, and then we're going to have to jack that up again. Something else you said was some of the inspectors that we get are junior or something. Why would we even accept some substandard inspectors to even look at our stuff if we're not having luck with them and they're not, as you just said, they're junior and they miss everything? Why aren't we calling those people on the carpet? Or whoever their employer is, and say, we don't need this person. Get us somebody that's competent.
I can speak to that.
Okay.
If I may.
Sure.
Thanks. So, you know, a lot of times we have had past really good success. My favorite inspector, I have a favorite inspector, don't tell anyone. Most of these really good inspectors are retired WSDOT City of Bellingham guys. Okay. They've retired from that first career, they've gone into their second career, and they're retiring again. And so it's you know, the engineering firms, you know, I've talked to various engineering firms, like, who do you have for inspection? It's like, well, I had this great guy, he's off playing golf, he's retired, he's, you know, off, you know, Florida, whatever. And they're having to backfill. And, you know, we've work projects where we have, you know, junior inspector. We're talking some, you know, the difference between somebody who's worked in the field for 5 years, which is, you know, still respectable. 5 years is, you know, not a small amount of time, versus guys that have worked in the field for 30 years. And on these projects, depending on the complexity and who, you know, obviously who you have as a contractor too, a lot of times what the inspector does is they look ahead, they talk to the contractor, they make sure that the contractor's always moving forward. And so you really do need somebody there to look after the project, be available, problem comes up, whether it's just a telephone call to me or the engineer, you get somebody a little bit more experienced out there. So I don't want anyone to get the impression that that money's wasted. I think we're pretty cognizant of that. I have had a couple of discussions about, you know, hey, I don't really like how this inspector's dealing with this, or I think that on future projects, you won't be sending, you know, we're going to be adjusting time and that sort of thing. So we're always making adjustments, and it's never perfect. But I don't think it's, you know, it's not an ideal situation. If I could have the guy that's been working in the field for 30 years versus the guy that's been working in the field for 5, I'm always going to choose the guy with more experience. So
I don't think anybody, I've known you for 10 years, I don't think anybody doubts how hard and how much you work, and that you're probably overworked. But I don't know what to do. This kind of hits us in the middle, and probably should have been a decision card for the upcoming budget. But I guess we'll see how the vote goes.
Councilmember Burst and Councilmember Watson. Maybe it's Councilmember Goodrich.
Brent Burst. Yeah.
Okay, Councilmember Goodrich and Councilmember Watson.
Then me.
Thank you.
At committee meeting, I asked, just from my own personal experience, and just for the audience, when I've had to hire somebody and compare them to a contractor, I had to say, well, here's the total package cost. You know, with insurance and everything and stuff, it's going to cost us X number of dollars to bring this employee in. And this is what we're spending for contract labor. And here's either how we're going to save or we're not going to save. I don't see that really here. I brought it up in committee. I was hoping to have something for tonight, so that we really know how this is going to, what this new employee is really going to cost us. And, you know, I can see the need to have somebody, because I've dealt with contractors before. You don't know how long they're going to stay sometimes. They kind of, you know, you don't know sometimes the quality you get. I've had that experience with draftsmen. Versus in-house, so I can see the advantage of it, but I'm just really concerned with the cost and when the slow times do come and we don't have the actual projects, or we're out there paying for a city employee and we're hiring additional contractors because he can't be in more than one place at a time, type thing. So I'm not really sure where the benefit's coming in.
I spoke with Mark about that today. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get with him last week. The total cost, including salary, benefits, L&I, retirement, everything in, was $101,000 for 2016 cost. And 2017, with the 3% wage adjustment, it's $106,000 for...
Plus a fee.
You know, like I was saying, the figures that I had included in the staff report indicated that for the last 2 years we had spent between $79,000 and $94,000. So the if we were looking at a 50% deferment of that, that would be placing it, you know, somewhere in the $50,000 range for cost, in addition to what we had paid previously.
If I could add to that, the portion of that that's not captured, that's very hard to quantify, is the slack, I guess, that I'm not able to keep up with. So if we have a project, and construction is underway, send them out in the field, go watch the contractor, do all your reports, file all your IDRs, that sort of thing. It's the stuff where we're developing projects and getting them ready to the point where we can go out to add, where, you know, if I've got a lot of plans to review, I have to lean on other people, whether that's other staff members, which we really don't have a lot of people available. I'm begging Bo for help. Hey, can you send out a guy to go do this? Can you send out a guy to go do that? I run out there, and then, you know, my other stuff doesn't get done. But there's also the issues where it's like, okay, I need to do this sort of investigation with this granting agency. If I don't have time to do that, then I've got to lean on the consultants to do additional work. And sometimes that's anywhere from $100 to $120 an hour. And it's very hard to quantify that because I'm leaning more heavily on the consultants for their expertise under their existing contracts to be able to provide that assistance.
Councilmember Watson and Councilmember Hanson.
And I'm not going to support this evening, not because I don't think that we probably do need someone. I'm concerned that there's no X by the finance director in this. So the finance director didn't review it before it went to committee, which I didn't realize until I got his email. And there's still no check here that he's reviewed this. So I'm uncomfortable that we're trying to figure out how much it's going to cost sitting here. I would like you to take it back, work with the finance director, come forward with a normal thing for us. This is how much it's going to cost in 2016. This is how much we think we'll recoup. This is how much is going to come out of general fund. This is how much we think we can charge the streets and sewers and so forth. Because right now we're trying to figure this all out in real time, and I'm very uncomfortable doing that. So I'm not going to support it tonight. That doesn't mean you can't bring it back the right way. Talk to Mark, get all the data together, but I can't support it the way it is.
Are you making a motion to send it back to the committee?
Well, I'd like to...
Councilmember Hanson, then Councilmember Rosen.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, having listened to the tapes of the committee, committee meetings, it sounded like that beyond just having the in-house inspector, that there's a lot of efficiencies that we get having this individual in-house, the better understanding of the city's infrastructure and the way things are done. And so, you know, while we do have roughly a $50,000 cost, there's an unquantifiable efficiency that comes with this as well. Is that correct? And just in the understanding of what's going on and what the future projects are and what they're seeing once they start tearing up the roads.
I think you summarized that well. You know, the other component to that is some of the interactions with the residents and the business owners and the property owners. It's very time consuming, and they deserve that. And you know, to be able to provide that is,
in
you know,
relationships.
You can't just ask, you know, you can't ask anybody to go out and try to explain this to a property owner necessarily, because, you know, if you own a piece of property, you own a business, and we're tearing up the street and we're messing up your life or your business for 3 to 6 months out of the year, you should be able to come into City Hall and not have to talk to somebody who's harried and, you know, out of the office doing this, that, or the other thing. You should be able to have your questions answered. So, I can really appreciate everybody's conservative, you know, the fiscal conservatism that's going on here, and we're trying. I think we're all kind of approaching it the same way from different angles. And
I appreciate Councilmember Hanson's statements on efficiencies. The way I've thought about it, and I spent quite a bit of time with staff today talking about both sides of the needs and the finances of it. It's like having too many cooks in a kitchen. Isn't always very efficient, and to have a person that's part of the city who has his consciousness and thoughts on all the projects at once, kind of knows what's going on here, and he can be working on this one, this may overlap and have ramifications for this project. He knows that. He's thinking about that. It's hard to put a dollar sign on that, but you just have a sense of institutional knowledge that this person would bring to this job. Hopefully you're hiring somebody that will stick with us for a while, so he brings that long-lasting knowledge to each of the projects. So whether tonight or later, I sure hope we can. We're on an especially busy town in terms of building. We're the busiest city outside of Bellingham in terms of construction. It's very busy here. You've got two staff members requesting this who are very conscious about saving money. So if not tonight, I hope pretty soon we can get this done. Councilmember Olson was next.
I know how hard you work, and I appreciate Kevin saying he more or less made a mistake. So I don't want to kill this. I think that might be where it was headed, but I would just like to send it back to the F&A committee, and then have it run through Mark, and then everything that everybody's kind of mentioned, as far as getting cost offsets and what have you. And we're just talking here about city projects. Nothing.
City projects
only. Okay, mm-hmm. So there's really not being billable is only going to be billing funds, different various slush funds. We're not going to be billing clients.
The intent is to go forward with one that would be dedicated towards the capital projects that we're undertaking as
okay.
as a
well, I just wanted to kind of clarify that sometimes people think billing will build the contractor who's building it outside. That's not. We're billing ourselves. So with that said, I'd like to make a motion just to send it back to the finance and administration and kind of work out all the stuff, what you've heard tonight, so that we can have more information and make a vote on it.
I'll second that.
So moved and seconded to send this back to the finance and administration committee to review the financial aspects of this. Are there any questions? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. It passed unanimously, and we'll revisit this again in a couple of weeks.
Great.
Thank you, Katie. Yeah, and thank you, Public Works Director Rents. Appreciate that.
I apologize.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm assuming we can have it at the next finance committee.
That was the motion. I think that's where
yeah.
it's going.
Okay.
Can we include a vehicle cost?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Comp plan amendment.
We'll get you a bicycle.
Yeah, we'll put them on a desk.
Item H, the economic development element of the comp plan.
All right, so Community Development Director Yori Burnett, as with the other elements of the comprehensive plan, the process that we're going through is the Planning Commission reviews it, gets it probably to 80 to 90%, brings it to the Council where the Council looks at it, gives additional direction where it goes back to the Planning Commission, then it comes back to the Council. So we're actually getting really close to the end of this, where on June 20th, we're expecting Council will have their last hearing. There's only one more element after this one. Well, there's a capital facilities element, and then there's the introduction. So the economic development element. This is the first time where the City of Ferndale is required to have an economic development element. Over the years, we've had a variety of different studies done or initiatives that are done by one group or another. We've had boards and commissions. And generally speaking, they might be active for a month or 3 years, and then they disappear. And so all of their history and all of their efforts are to a certain extent lost because most of the time they don't end with a success. They start off fast, and then they slowly peter out. The economic development element in the comprehensive plan is intended in part to memorialize these efforts and to set clear citywide goals and policies that we can follow over time, that we can measure over time, and that folks outside of the city can look and see, here's how the city views its efforts for economic development. So we could have gone in a number of different approaches. We could have created something that looked like a phone book and had a whole bunch of different projects in there, a bunch of very specific approaches to economic development. Or we could go in the direction that we're proposing to go. And actually, I need to thank Councilmember Hansen and Councilmember Watson, who really kind of steered me back towards sanity on this one a little bit, to say this element shouldn't have all the answers and shouldn't pretend like it has all the answers for economic development. Instead, what it should do is it should generally describe our history, Ferndale's history, because it's really not described anywhere else. Should talk about it, our strengths and weaknesses and opportunities. And then through its goals and policies, really cast it to you folks and the people who are going to succeed you, and to staff and to the public to say, how do we accomplish these various broad goals? Rather than, again, say, here's a specific project that may or may not succeed. So it's based on a couple of, on a few tent poles. And I'm just going to read those off for you and then turn it over to you for questions. The main goals that we have, and these main goals end up filtering down to our overall objectives, where that's where we come up with the specific policies. How do we start thinking about doing this? To have a diversified economy, to have local jobs, to have robust retail, a unique identity, a return to downtown, and to be business friendly, or to maintain being business friendly. That our strengths include our location, proximity to Canada, proximity to Bellingham, access to transportation, available land, reputation, and proximity to the Lummi Nation. That our weaknesses include our location. It's a strength and a weakness. Most of our strengths can also be weaknesses and vice versa. Our lack of identity, relative to Bellingham, perhaps even relative to Linden and the rest of Whatcom County. Our workforce, we're currently where our workforce is largely a commuter workforce, doesn't identify Ferndale as anything but being where they rest their head at night, looking to change that. The perceived lack of utilities or real lack of utilities in some of our areas, especially along Malloy and Grandview, can, especially in time, turn into a weakness. And then another potential weakness is competition, where if we are to compete head-to-head against other jurisdictions or other governments and still maintain our costs of doing business, we might find that we cannot compete with other agencies and other governments and other cities. That is the economic development that we propose in a nutshell. Again, there's hopefully it doesn't provide a whole bunch of surprises to folks who live and work in Ferndale that this is what Ferndale actually is, all of its warts and great things and all, but that there are a lot of opportunities to make things better, and that there are also measurables that we can compare year to year. Our sales tax, where we're low compared to sales tax compared to most jurisdictions. Who generates our sales tax? Where, again, when you have two fast food stores in Ferndale in your top 10 of sales tax generators, that's not necessarily the sign of a healthy economy or
health.
so that there are ways to improve. And we're starting not in a place where we're starting off poorly, because we are the most vibrant city right now as far as development is concerned, but we're also not operating from a strength. So there are a lot of opportunities. This doesn't try to solve them. Looking for any direction, comments you may have, and then I'll go back to the Planning Commission.
Council, what is your pleasure? You've got the man in front of you. Councilmember Watson.
I guess I'm wondering if Council agrees with the strengths and the weaknesses. I mean, are those the words we want to use? Are those the things that we think are our strengths and weaknesses? It's an important section of the element, and I'm just not sure. I'm still kind of going back and forth on some of them.
Well, and one of them that we talked about at the Planning Commission, somewhat the elephant in the room, is Lummi Nation. Lummi Nation, our relationship with them is a lot like siblings in some ways, where sometimes we fight with them more than anyone else, and but then if anyone else tries to fight, then we're going to defend them more than anyone else would. So is that a strength or a weakness? It's what we make it, is kind of what we were talking about.
And I guess I was seeing it more of a sense that we have a good local economy. For a county that's so small, we have a fairly vibrant economy. There's a lot of high-tech businesses in Whatcom County, and I'm wondering if we can, rather than just saying Lummi Nation, if there's a way to say just vibrant county economy. Kind of take everybody into account, not just the Lummi, because the Lummi are part of it, but we also have all the industry out at Cherry Point. We've got a lot of manufacturing here in Ferndale and Bellingham. Because, I mean, that is a big selling point of all the companies we already have here. So,
Can I take it out?
Not take it out, but change it, not to be... Because you would mention that in the text, you know, Bellingham, you know, Whatcom County is home to the refineries. It's also Bellingham is home to a lot of high-tech companies. You know, Whatcom Community College is now doing all the stuff with cybersecurity. The Lummi Nation is continuing to grow. It would just be a vibrant, you know, for a county so small, we really do have a vibrant economy.
I would suggest leaving it in. But you have it listed as a nonprofit. Can you change it to government or tribal government?
Sovereign nation.
I'm sorry, where is that?
They who must be obeyed.
Chapter 6, economic development element. You have Lummi Indian Business Council as a nonprofit.
They're definitely not a nonprofit.
Well, there's a part of it that is nonprofit. Lummi Nation Service Organization. That's under Lummi Indian Business Council.
Page number.
Certainly
amend that.
Yeah. Page 9.
On the right side or the left side?
Not sure.
Because the big document is in the 90s, but his individual document is 14.
Oh, I see it. I see it. Yeah, absolutely. We can change that. And the general manager just gave us updated employee numbers as well. So that was.
Okay.
I think I'd still like to see it change to just maybe the symbol for Whatcom County. And then in the text, you could still discuss the Lummi Nation because they are a large developer and there's a lot going on, but there's also a lot of other stuff. I don't want to lose sight of the industries at Cherry Point, all the manufacturing we have here in the county. I just think I think we're missing a chance for someone who doesn't live here to realize. Because, you know, in the Choose Whatcom website, they pretty much just talked about the casinos and the refineries for Ferndale. And I want us to kind of think in a broader sense.
I think that the Lummi Indian Business Council, they provide $496 million to this county, and we should leave it in there.
Well, I understand you work for them, so that's what you would love to have. But I think we need to be broader.
Anymore?
I just think we need to be broader.
Councilmember Goodrich.
I kind of agree with Councilmember Watson to include something more about the manufacturing that's going on here in town. We've got Samson Rowe, Cascade, Gaffo.
Tri-Ban, though.
Yeah, okay. Some other folks that are already doing business here, but they're little buildings that we don't go into and know that there's 200 people working over here or whatever it is. I don't know what Samson Rowe, how many people they employ, but I'm sure it's more than two or three.
They're bringing 100 to the Star Park.
Yeah. Cool. So I think we need to do that. I agree also with this, that one of the weaknesses is the lack of identity. And I know when the EDC used to meet here, and that was one of the key things from the beginning of the EDC meeting, was the branding of Ferndale, and to try to get us out of the Ferntucky, Hickville, into, hey, we're a vibrant, growing city, and to lose that other image. So I agree that is definitely one of our weaknesses. I still hear comments about Ferndale from folks.
Mr. Sweeney.
That's something I'm very conscious about in all of our city communication, and that's something in terms of just our long-term image that we're working on. So, duly heard.
Thank you. Other questions or comments from the City Council? Direction for Mr. Burnett?
Just real quick. Because it says weaknesses, it says customers. I'm wondering if there's a better word. Is one of our weaknesses we don't have enough customers, or that we're a bedroom community?
There's a better way of saying it than...
I know, I don't know if I know...
That's a shop local idea?
Yeah.
Right. But the example that I've given is Edeline Dairy, mm-hmm. where we have enough rooftops to support a wide range of businesses when they want to. But if they don't want to, then they're going to go elsewhere. So how do we get our Ferndale residents in the Ferndale market area, which is the Ferndale School District, to say, think Ferndale first? And we might not need to answer that in here, but it's a vexing problem that we do need.
I'm trying to think of how to...
It is a weakness.
Yeah.
Anyone else want a chance first before Brett? Councilmember Goodrich.
I was just going to comment on that as a ex-ACE employee. I don't work there anymore. Retired. But then they were talking to me today, go, please come back, so I don't know if I will or not. Maybe one of those reoccurring employees there. But that's one of the things that we've heard from people. It's kind of like, I didn't know we could get this here. And how much stuff that they could buy at ACE versus having to drive into Bellingham and, go to one of the big box stores in Bellingham. The flip side of that is I've heard people say, well, I can get it cheaper at Home Depot or at Lowe's. And then they say, well, but then there's the convenience. So I think when you're looking at shopping local, it's one is what's available here in Ferndale, and then the customer service or whatever that gives you that value added. Yeah, I'll pay a little bit more for that screwdriver by buying it here at Ace or True Value versus going into Home Depot where I could save 25 cents, but it's going to cost me $1.50 in gas and time and things. So I don't know where you balance that time savings and stuff by shopping locally here versus the first thought, I'll go to Bellingham.
And how you explain that to someone.
Councilmember Taylor, then Councilmember Watson.
The only thing I've
heard in the community when I ran for office is that there's a lot of smaller mom-and-pop shops here in the city of Ferndale, and they've been here for a long, long time. And, you know, when we get the talking that we're having Walmart come into town or some big box store, you know, these small mom-and-pop shops are concerned, you know, what's going to happen to them. And I think you kind of mentioned that a little bit. So, you know, I didn't see that anywhere in here. I'm not sure if we need to identify that.
We did try to address it where there's one of those what ifs.
What the big if box, what
if? Big box was to come. And obviously it depends on what big box. You know, the Sports Authority right now might not be any longer. So it might not compete, whereas you might have other big boxes, which are the so-called category killers. But then how much would they impact Ferndale, because we already have similar stores in Bellingham?
Well, you said it earlier, there are strengths and weaknesses to just about any economic dynamic that occurs. It's kind of part of our system. Do you sense you have some direction from council before you go back to the Planning Commission? We've heard emphasis on some of our other medium-sized businesses, Sampson, DAFO, the importance of those. I'm not sure what you're going to do. I personally think that the tribe is a very significant economic engine here in the county, unique, different, and something that we should include. But
I am not hearing a whole bunch of disagreement with what's in here beyond what's been stated. There's going to be other opportunities to modify it, and it's not written in stone. So as we explore,
it's coming back.
Exactly.
It is coming back.
Quick question. I would be curious what they think of the goals and policy in the Planning Commission, because you've got all these goals and different policies, and I'm curious if they're happy with those, and because some of them are pretty broad. And it's good. I'm just wondering if the Planning Commission sees something else.
Commissioner Goldsmith, do you want me to speak for the Planning Commission, or
would you speak?
And then she'll correct you.
The Planning Commission expressed some concern over very specific policies. For instance, we say 200,000 square feet of new office space within the next 20 years. And they said, well, you know, let's see whether or not we actually need that. Let's come up with a program to see, do we actually need 200,000 square feet, or do we actually have enough office space to sustain us over the next period of time? They also, so they didn't want so many specifics at this point. They also said that rather than saying goals and policies, to look at it more as overall objective, here's where we want to be, here are our goals in terms of how we want to get there, and then here's our implementation strategy to how to get there. And so that's something that we will be adding, probably just a paragraph or two towards the end, saying, again, this is not intended to implement. This is intended to say, hey, let's take a trip. And then you go and you buy the tickets and all of that.
I think I would rather see that rather than, because it's confusing, because you've got some goals and then you throw in a policy, and then you've got some goals and throw in a... I'd rather you pick 3 to 5 doable goals and then tell us what kind of policies we would need to enact in order to make those goals happen. Something fairly broad, but doable.
And measurable.
Measurable, yeah. Because I think this is really long. I got kind of confused by it all. There's a lot of policies and goals.
And we did that intentionally.
Excuse me. I know it's hardly a challenge.
No. So that you could cross out the ones that you didn't like instead of say, gosh, there are only 3 in here, and I guess I like
them. And I did put white on my screen, but, you know, it's not working.
Counselor, any other directions for Mr. Burnett before he takes us back to the Planning Commission? Seeing none?
One more.
Oh, Councilmember Taylor.
With the incoming health facility coming in off Portalway, does that affect our numbers that are for how many health care jobs we would have here?
It would, anticipating that we would update it over time, because in a month they're not going to be here, but in a year they will, and then we'll be able to go back through. I mean, you know, again, 2 weeks ago, we were thinking that in 6 weeks there would be practically 0 jobs at Alcoa. Officially today, we now know that's the opposite. So it's very dynamic as far as what goes on.
Which is why the comp plan isn't broad strokes. It just can't and shouldn't be that specific, should it?
No, and as the Public Works Director will tell you in just a minute or two, that's one of the beauties and differences between the 20-year plan and the 6-year plan, is you can be pretty broad at this point.
Any more questions of staff? Thank you, Council. And where are we at? Is it Kevin's turn for the 201? Thank you, Council. So, going to continue where we left off this afternoon with some projects. And Transportation 201.
201 with the project.
Welcome back. Which I think you got a handout earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, prior to the meeting, I gave everybody a handout. Included on the handout, you're going to see the project list that is part of the comprehensive plan. Looks like a bit more now. All right. I get the distinct pleasure of showing Council the first look at the map that we've been working with, getting a kind of consolidated look at the city's comprehensive plans, the water plan, sewer plan. I believe that we have, and I'm not seeing them, so I think I might have to close and reopen it and populate some of the parks projects that are going in there. But what you see is a GIS map of the city, and I can zoom in, and it'll bring up details of each one of the projects. And unfortunately, with the AV system that we have, the colors are a little bit hard to see. But each one of them is color-coded, the blue being water, green being sewer projects, and then the kind of tan or brown being transportation projects. And then you can click on each one of them, and it'll bring up a window, which gives you a little bit of a narrative on what the project is and what the parameters are of each one of the projects. Yuri's been working quite a bit with Transfo, getting them to help out to get all the transportation projects plugged into this, and then Brenna's been working to create the shape files from the other consultants as we develop the water and sewer plans to be able to get all those integrated in here. And I think it's a really good visual tool for everybody to look at and see where the city projects are going to be and then get some details for them. So tonight I'm going to be talking about the 20-year project list that's included in our comprehensive plan transportation element. And so I'm going to go ahead and click off on some of the layers that were on here so that we can get down to just the transportation layer. And I think it was kind of important to have those turned on in the beginning so that you can see the multiple layers that are available in there. And you can look at where we're doing a project is that a lot of times we'll be able to do a street project and also do a water project and a sewer project at the same time. So utilizing each one of those components to put the project together and do a comprehensive project. We don't want to go in and do a street project only to realize that, oh, there's a deficient water line underneath that. We should have addressed that when we did have the street torn up. So we like to look at that as a comprehensive whole as we're developing the project to come up with something that's going to give us the best value. So as Yuri indicated, you know, the difference between like the 20-year plan and the 6-year plan, and the 20-year plan here includes the projects that were looked at to increase both capacity within the system and also address some deficiencies that were within the system. When you're looking at the 20 plan, a lot of those projects are capacity improvements that are within the system, looking forward for development that's coming in or the potential for development to come in, and then utilizing that vision that we have for where development's going to go to address the roadways within those areas. When you look at the 6-year plan, a lot of times what you're doing is you're taking components off of the 20-year plan that you've identified. This development has occurred, therefore we need to do this project. Or traffic has gotten worse in this area, therefore we need to improve this intersection. And you're pulling those from the 20-year plan to put them on the 6-year plan, but you're also looking at the 6-year plan for a lot of your condition issues, so that if there's a deficient roadway, if there's a failing roadway section, that a lot of those are going to show up on the 6-year plan. I hate to think that we put a condition problem on the 20-year plan. Oh, we're going to deal with that road
in 19 years because it's bad, but it's not that bad. So, you know, those conditioned ones are more immediate needs, whereas the planning for capacity ends up being the more long-term needs. And you'll see that as we go through. The sheet that I gave you is broken down into the first page is intersection operation, intersection improvements. The second page, the blue projects, are widening and reconstruction projects. That's where a lot of the detail in the six-year plan starts to come in. Little orange section at the bottom is new roadways. And then the green at the end is something that we're not doing. Those are outside jurisdictions that are doing projects around us that are going to be impacting the system or potentially impacting the system within the city. So I think that I could just go through the project list and give you a little bit of detail on each one. I don't want to take up a whole lot of time, so if I blaze through something, if you have a question, you want me to come back to it. And as I go through it, I'll try to highlight how some of them are based off a known, we're going to need to address this intersection because of ongoing traffic problems. So it's a failing intersection, or we see an intersection that's at a low level of service. And then other ones are really dependent on that development going in. So starting off with the project list, we're going to go Washington Street and Washington Street, Vista Drive intersection. So if we can zoom in on Vista and Washington, we can pull up that project. And as you all know, that Washington crosses Vista isn't lined up very well, so this project would be putting in one larger roundabout or two smaller roundabouts to improve that that intersection. The second one on the list is going out to Portal Way. At the end of Portal Way is where it intersects with Enterprise and Destiny, improving the intersection there, which is to remove the leg of Portal Way and improve the alignment to Destiny Street. So it's kind of a safety improvement. That's not the best intersection at this point. Main Street and Hovander was the one that Papa John got up and discussed with us today. And as everybody knows, that's a particularly difficult intersection. There are a couple of different concepts to address this intersection where we have, you can see that this one is to restrict the northbound left turns. So we would be not allowing anybody going northbound to turn left onto Main Street. It would be a right turn only onto Main Street. And that's in the instance where we go ahead and construct a roundabout at the Walgreens intersection so that you'd be directing traffic right turn, they'd transit through the roundabout, and then continue westbound. That one becomes more difficult if we don't do a roundabout at the Walgreens intersection, which is up for discussion right at the moment. And then the second improvement at that intersection would be to install a partial signal that would give the people pulling off of Main Street onto Hovander, going westbound on Main, then southbound on Hovander, the opportunity to go. And I think everybody's been caught at that intersection where we've seen truck traffic that's kind of parked out, taking up both lanes, blocking it, not being able to go through the intersection. So a couple of ones looking at improving the condition there. Moving on to Main Street and La Bounty. As we all know, this was a project that we currently have in design. We're almost at the finishing stages of design with this project. And it's one that I think it's important to note. If we have development, this needs to come. If the Nordic retail development goes in, this intersection is going to be important for us to improve to maintain concurrency within our system. But even absent the developer coming in, we'll need to address this intersection at some point in the future. It may be a little bit later down the line if we don't have a big retailer at that location, but we're still going to need to improve that intersection.
Real quick, is that the correct cost for that? It seems low the moment we've been told that roundabout would cost. I thought it was like a $4 million roundabout.
The project as it's developed is we have the roundabout, and we're working with a storm conveyance and a sewer conveyance the project costs that are included in here are planning level projects costs that were developed as part of the 20-year comprehensive plan. They do differ a little bit from fully identified project costs. What we did when we developed the project list in here is we had Transpo apply a uniform methodology to each one of the projects so that we could evaluate project to project. But it does not include the other components to the project.
Okay.
Moving on, we have two projects. We have Smith Road at Labounty and Smith Road at Barrett Road. Both of those are intersection improvements that would be installing roundabouts at both of those interchanges. These are projects that would be driven by the development of the gateway retail study that were identified in that gateway study. Project I-7 would be roundabout located at Portal Drive. This is the one that we were talking about earlier. This one would be to construct a full roundabout at the location, or a single lane roundabout at that location. Project I-8, Thornton and Malloy Avenue, would be installing a single lane roundabout at that location. Now, the single lane roundabout is keyed out as a separate line item here because it's an intersection improvement compared to the Thornton Road overpass, which is a new roadway project. So that when we're developing the Thornton project, the roundabout at Thornton and Malloy is included in the connection over the railroad tracks and down. It is separated out here because it's an intersection improvement versus a new roadway section, as identified later in there. I-9, we'll come back to that one. I-9 is the Walgreens roundabout, and that's a two-lane roundabout at Walgreens. We're currently investigating another idea with that location, which would be a northbound double left-hand turn coming out of Walgreens and not proceeding forward with the roundabout due to the potential for right-of-way take implications with that. The footprint of that roundabout is quite a bit bigger, I think, than what anybody had envisioned it being. And to get the traffic movement through it, we're pretty much killing all four corners of that intersection. So we're kind of taking a second look at that before we go too far down the design path with it.
You're saying coming out of Walgreens, you have two left turn lanes?
Two left-hand turns, correct.
And so you're going to take the mess at Walgreens and put it at the railroad tracks when everybody tries to merge back into one lane at the railroad tracks.
It's...
Right.
You're just moving it from one place to another.
It's a potential that we're investigating. So it's, you know, by no means is it a perfect solution, and until we do the analysis of the traffic impacts, I'm not exactly sure what the end result's going to be. But in, you know, our process of working through the design on the roundabout, we need to explore options and make sure that we're making the best decisions for moving forward.
Will you be doing that? Because L.A. Samuels is going to be developing something right there. So would you just, whatever improvements they would make, would just feed into what we're going to be doing?
We have a Yori has taken in an application for or proposal for a development at that location. So they've come in and submitted for that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and Yuri's been in communication with them throughout the process of them developing that project.
We are aware of that. That's why we're taking a second look at that roundabout.
This does illustrate what we talked about at the study session, that remember, all these projects, there's adjacent private property to them, most of which could be developed to higher than what it is now. So at what point do we fully design all of these different improvements? Because that would cost millions upon millions of dollars. And Walgreens is one example. We thought we had possibly more time to do it than it turns out we had.
I-10 is intersection improvements at Rule and Slater. Included in the plan here is signalization, or improvements to signalization. There has been discussion of a roundabout at that, consistent with further development within that corridor. I-11 Labounty and Nordic Way would be improvements to signalization, again, tied together with the development of the property on Nordic. Main Street and Barrett Road, and this one is much the same as the two Smith Road roundabouts that are driven by development of the property that was included within that gateway study area. And then Church and Thornton, and that's an improvement to the intersection at Church and Thornton to repair fairing driving circuits and do ADA ramps.
The Main Street Barrett Road, is that a washed up intersection? Or are we far enough away from, because that's not the on-ramp.
No, it's outside of that.
Do they have to remove it because we might be impacting their flow off the freeway? Or?
Oh, across the street is the
on-ramp. Yeah,
because the on-ramp is across the street. So.
Anytime we do projects that are close to the WSDOT, right away we enter into discussion with them. Okay. And then if we want to move on to page two, you'll see the second column on here is the 2015 TIP project line. It gives you kind of an idea of which ones were included on the 2015 TIP. If you go back to the first page and look, you'll notice that very few of those projects, there were only two of them that were included on the TIP. So the six-year plan didn't include the interchange and improvements to intersections. Like I said, when we get into that, the difference, one of the differences between the six-year and the 20 is we start looking at a lot of condition problems. Within this blue section, you'll notice that the widening and reconstruction, a lot of these are addressing deficiencies within roads, and so this is where we get into a lot of areas where we're tying condition into the decision more so than we are with capacity. So Project R1 Thornton from Church to Marine. So we're looking at improving, widening the section of the road through there, installing curb gutter and sidewalk on one side of the road. Project R2 Washington Street from Vista to 2nd Avenue. And the description in the file here is a little bit different than the one. This is a project that we're going to be doing this summer. So the project costs are different because the scope was different from the 20-year planning window to the The assumptions that Transpo had used in that is different than what the actual design was. But we're looking to protect and improve pedestrian safety, including curb gutter and sidewalk improvements. And as you'll remember, we got Safe Routes to School funding to do the projects out there. We're going to be doing another one of the rapid flashing beacons. And this one is illustrative of another feature within this GIS map where you can click on the More Info tab, and it brings up the City of Ferndale webpage with the project sheet on it so that you can go down through and look at the increased information. As we have these projects queued up for construction, we put together the webpage, which gives you more information about them. So back to our map. Project R3 Portal Way, I-5 northbound to Trigg Road, is a complete reconstruction of that road. And as I said, that's one of the ones that we currently have people, when they come in to do a project, come in and put in their frontage improvements, doing curb gutter and sidewalk, but we lack a cohesive design for the entire corridor. So the project that's identified on here is reconstructing that entire entire length of Portal Way and widening it to the city standard.
Councilmember Olson?
Do we want? Are we almost finished, or do we want to take a break and release the students? It's 8 o'clock.
How much more you got, Kevin?
I could go on, or I could stop. It's up to you. It's going a little bit. I know we're going a little bit long.
Council, what is your pleasure? Hang in there, or do you want to take a break?
I'd like to release the students. Yeah. Can we just release the students?
Kevin, let's go ahead and do that. That's okay. A good idea. Let's take a 5 minute. 5 minutes only. The students that need signatures, we'll take care of those.
Yeah.
So... 5 minutes.
Exactly.
How are you doing today?
Hi.
Oh, my.
Senior citizen. Yeah. Senior citizen. Horses? Senior citizen. I don't remember.
Close enough.
They do like check the air conditioner,
so you just turn it back
and
on.
Ask to have someone come and come by their house.
No.
Like that. Yeah. They can't like write.
Oh, that's perfectly fine in here. I don't know what you're talking about.
See those things that say, you know, your speed is like this, they do that. Yeah. So they do, they're all volunteers.
That's cool. I'll have to watch it tomorrow. Oh,
hopefully your wife didn't hear it. We'll tell you when you get home.
Yeah. Bang it.
Nobody
will sing it. I
know you just started. Almost a girl's goal.
Griffin just sat down at a piano one day.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah,
thank
you. Did the show and he said, I'll need something. Yeah, popped out of his head.
We were still missing Councilor Burch.
Okay.
Jeopardy.
Wait, are we?
And then he said, well,
Kevin,
is this already online?
No.
Well, if you have the password for this.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I'm accessing online right now.
Will it be the password?
It will be. We're moving forward with implementation of a new GIS browser,
right?
You know, interface. It's not going to be exactly like this, although the information is going to be the same. But the actual. This one's an ArcGIS viewer that's a little bit different than the viewer that the city is going to be utilizing, but the information that's included in it is going to be the same. All the information gets plopped down into our viewer. We're in the process of working that out. Brenna, our GIS specialist, has been working together to get that rolled out, but it's a major process to go through and upgrade the GIS system, and I'm pretty much consistently amazed at Brenna's ability to do that, and she does fantastic work. She put in a great amount of work getting the water and sewer projects into here and getting the descriptions entered in and everything. So back to the list, we're at Thornton Road, Vista de Molloy. And again, this is just widening and city's up to city standard. Consistent with the project is we see that the Thornton overcross is going forward and we're getting funding for it. You know, more and more traffic will be utilizing Thornton, so we're going to need to make improvements all along. You can see there's projects all the way from Church Road on with Thornton. Project R6, LeBounty Drive, Seahawk to Sunset. As many of you know, it's a pretty narrow section of road down through there, if I could find where it's at.
And you, like how we've done over the last 20 years, skipped over Lego.
Did I?
You did. they're used to it. So.
It's strange. I apologize to anybody that lives on Lego that I just skipped right over the fact that we were going to work on their road. So, yeah. So looking at Lego, that's another one of the projects that's going and widening that
up to city standards. And then two projects that are identified, they're both Ferndale Terrace, two different sections of Ferndale Terrace, so the easterly section and then the westerly section of Ferndale Terrace, improving both of those. Unfortunately, we had received $250,000 from the Department of Ecology for moving forward with LID stormwater improvements to Ferndale Terrace, only to be subsequently notified by Department of Ecology that they had reallocated that funding to another area and were not funding any of the... but they defunded a large portion of the stormwater projects. So we had gone through the RFQ for consultants, and we're moving forward with getting a consultant contract when we got I'm going to say we got notified when we approached Department of Ecology about not being notified that we were moving forward with the contract, and found out that the funding had been reallocated for that one. So they're keeping the list active. If funding is restored to that program, then they're going to be going off of that same project list. So depending on what level the funding is restored for those projects, we'll move forward with that in the future. So we have the groundwork done, but don't know what the timeline is for moving forward. And again, we're back to Main Street this time.
Going back to your Labounty.
Yes.
You just... How does our, what did we do, the
local area improvement thing?
Yeah, we did that thing where we charged everybody to improve the road.
LID.
And now,
it was an LID.
LID, and now we're going to go back and redo it again.
Different section.
Oh, it is.
Different section of Alabama.
Okay, I was just from Sunset South.
Right. Yeah, we're going Sunset North.
Don't we redo part of that road too?
No. This road, the improvements on LaBounty stop at Sunset. There have been improvements up at the top with the, I believe it's LaBounty Estates was the development that went up there. So the roadway has been widened through the northernmost section where it turns away from I-5. So that area was improved when the LaBounty Estates went in. And then as you go down, there's the storage unit that's on the east side of the road, and then going down to Sunset where the improvement stopped. The jail was intended to be built on the west side of the road, just north of Sunset. So this is going through and improving that road section.
I thought we did a thing where we tore out and rebuilt.
Getting overlaid this month. Yeah. Emergency.
Didn't build sidewalks. It was overlaid.
Right. Yeah, and this project is to widen and improve the road section going through there. Although we are constrained, this one is going to be kind of an expensive project from right-of-way acquisition along the just south of LaBounty Estates. There's very narrow right-of-way through there. So,
I was just kind of surprised to see that on there, seeing we did the whole overlay and stuff a couple of years ago. And it's kind of a nice road. Yeah, it's narrow, but...
Yeah,
it's a nice and this shape is compared to some other roads.
Yeah, and this is a widening, so it's a capacity improvement.
Just jump in,
Councilmember Taylor.
I was just wondering, do you have I-5 Slater roundabout project in here?
No, that's a washed out jurisdiction, so that one's outside of it. The Barrett Road, Smith Road north to the city limits, that's another one. So Barrett Road on the east side of the freeway, another one that's tied to the Gateway Development Project. LaBounty Drive, Main Street to Smith Road, so the upper section of LaBounty, again, a capacity improvement project. And then Douglas Road, improving a section of Douglas Road. And Washington Street from Lego to Vista is the last one. Now, that's a project that we are going to be going into design for, and we have received some TIB funds to go forward with that. And then down to the two big ones, the Thornton project, they're listed as two. We've got two projects on here, and one is the Thornton Road interchange, and again, this one links back to... Or should, no, they don't have the link in there. It just links back to the city page. But that one is another one that we can link back to the project. So Thornton Road, Malloy to Portal Way. So going down. And then included for another project on the 20-year plan is the dashed section that you can see there, which is the connection over to Newton.
I thought we took that off our plan. Did we not take it off?
I thought so.
Not off. It was the...
I thought we did.
The when David Shear came forward and did the presentation on which direction to go with the project, there was one that you know, was designed to provide easy extension of the road over, and council chose not to go with the easy extension, but to go with the project that just connected the two. But it still remains on the 20 list as a project that would improve capacity and improve that connection over to.
I think it's good to leave it there. I'm noticing a lot of development off Portal. It looks like interest there, affordable land, and someday we might want to do that.
And then moving on to the third page, and I'm just going to highlight a couple of these. I'm not going to go through them. But the green projects.
One thing, too, I remember discussion, I think it was one of the WashDOT people where somebody was saying that they didn't like the on-ramps at Portal and they wanted to push them up north. Because it was such a short, especially on the southbound side between the on-ramp and the bridge, that they wanted to push them north. Well, if they wanted to do something like that in conjunction with the Thornton overcrossing of I-5,
yeah.
You know, instead of, you know, basically shut down Portal and move everything up to Thornton, how would we... Would there be a way that we could incorporate that idea into our 20-year plan so it gets into the stateside thinking, or does the state the driving force on that? We have to just kind of go with wherever they end up putting the ramp.
Well, I mean, it is a state interchange, but I think the concept of you know, looking at an interchange located at Thornton, and it's something that we've just informally, you know, chatted about with WashDOT, is that they are constrained with the southbound on-ramp here, is that it doesn't provide adequate distance to get up to speed before you hit the bridge. And then they're also constrained with that off-ramp. And when we see that backup of traffic at the intersection, that Portal that we're currently having, we're getting backups onto the main line, and then you're constrained by the bridge. So those are, you know, issues that everybody knows about. It would have been much more beneficial if they would have located that at the Newker interchange.
Was there any way to put something like that in here so that we could kind of say to WashDOT, hey, we agree Portals, but this is kind of where we would like to see the interchange move to?
I mean, I think we could engage in the discussion in the text of the document. In the transportation
versus, you know, spending a lot of money on Portal, if we could, you know, get them to spring part of the money or something to do that.
So just another thing that I didn't highlight in the beginning is that a lot of these improvements, you can see there's a column just to the right of the cost column that is the TIF eligible project, and that's the transportation impact fee. And as Yori spoke about, we're able to do the transportation impact fees for projects that are going in. We can only utilize those funds for projects that include increased capacity within our road system. And so you can look down the project list and you can see which ones are TIF eligible and which ones aren't TIF eligible. So that's you know, going at what funding package we could utilize in order to pay for those improvements.
Thank you.
And I'd be more than happy to answer questions.
Councilman Goodgood.
With the projects in the blue, with a lot of those being on the six-year TIF, is there other ones that we need to add to the 20-year now? Because those will be knocked off here relatively quickly, and you're not going to have much of a blue list. You may not have much of a blue list here. If we're looking at a 20-year plan, should there be more non-six-year projects on there than the ones we've tagged for 6 years? I know that being on the 6-year plan doesn't mean it'll be done in 6 years, but is there other roads that Public Works would like to see added to the 20-year list that, while we're doing this?
Are there roads? Yes. I mean...
You know, I think with anything, we can always come up with more roads that we can add to it. We have, you know, condition issues throughout the city that we would like to address. As far as the long-range planning for, you know, widening roadways, a lot of the roadways that are seen there need to be brought up to city standards. They're going to be widened. They're going to include curb, gutter, sidewalk, you know, potential for a bike lane, pedestrian improvements, those multimodal improvements that we see more and more with projects going forward. I mean, we could pack the list even more, but even as it sits, you know, if we look back and look at the projected costs for the entire period, we're looking at $152 million worth of projects that I don't think we have $152 million to fund. So we get into that, you know, how many projects do we have on the list and how many projects do we have the real likelihood of being able to proceed forward with?
Yuri?
Well, and I would also say the fact that there are a lot of blue projects doesn't necessarily mean, well, I'm sorry, the fact that there were a lot of projects that were on the six-year list does not necessarily mean that that's a good thing. Where we had 14 transportation projects we expected to do in 6 years, plus our water, sewer, storm, parks projects. And you saw poor Katie here, you know, who was saying, oh my gosh, do I manage a different project every couple of months? So it might be that some of these that are currently on the 6 year might not need to be on the 6 year over time. That it's okay to put them on the 20 year if we're not going to get to them in 6 years.
I know that there was a philosophy by some of the council members, and I don't say anything, but let's put it on the six-year plan so that the residents know we're thinking of them, even though we really don't have a plan to do that. Now, it'll be up to this council to say, do we want to still do that and put leave stuff on the six-year plan that we really know that we're not going to do in 6 years? You know, and should we take some of those projects off of that and put them back into the 20-year plan, even though it's going to maybe piss off some of our constituents?
Councilmember Taylor?
My concern is if we're building the Thornton overpass to alleviate some of the traffic coming through Main Street, and yet we're looking at building how many roundabouts on Main Street? And if we're going to eliminate some of that traffic and they're going to be diverted through Thornton, then why would it make sense for us to add those roundabouts?
Well, and, you know, like I said, there's, you know, when we look at the plan, we identify what we're going to need for capacity and whether or not those intersections are performing well. But we also go back and evaluate on a continuing basis how they are performing. And just because a project is identified on the 20-year plan doesn't mean that during that 20-year period that we have to construct it, you know, that we're moving forward with it. So, you know, as you look at it, it's a planning document taking into account the assumptions that we made when we were putting it together, the knowledge that we have about where we think the development is going to go, and, you know, a little bit of crystal ball to it. And then as we move forward, we narrow that down, and those projects that come off the 20-year list and go on to the 6-year list that are envisioned and, you know, that we look forward to constructing within that more near-term period are ones that have been identified as we really need to address this. So, you know, yes, it shows up on the 20-year plan. Like I had said before, some of those are development dependent. You know, if this comes, then we have identified that we will have to do this. And we may or may not have a good handle on where that development occurs, so we may or may not need to make that improvement to that intersection.
So does our current city staff do all the evaluating, or are we consulting with, like, a transportation planner to come in and help us with a professional that has transportation planning experience? Are they coming in to help us with these things? Or?
The development of the project list is based upon the modeling that's been done within the system. Transpo has been hired to develop the transportation element of the plan, so city staff works in conjunction with Transpo to develop the, you know, kind of planning goals and where we think development's going to occur. Transpo does the modeling on it and then models if development goes in here and we know how many trips are going to be generated by this type of development, then we know how many trips are going to be going through these interchanges, and we can come up with a plan for mitigating those impacts. So, yes, we have a professional traffic engineering firm that we engage to develop the project list in conjunction with city staff.
Oatmeal deal?
I think so.
Very good. Any final questions of staff? Thank you for your patience and hanging in there. Transport 201. I think that's the end of the staff report on that matter. Go back to the cheat sheet here. And we're at the end here. Mayor reports, just a couple things. The housing roundtable is next Wednesday?
Wednesday.
And I think we're going to have 40 or 50 people there, so I'm excited about that. Council, of course, is invited to come. And then City Clerk Susan Duncan / Human Resources person, and I will be in Yakima this week for the Labor Relations Conference done by ADWC. So, Member Olson, you've got the helm for the next few days. So. Council reports. Councilmember Watson.
The Friends of the Ferndale Library is having a plant sale this Saturday, and it looks like half the city is having a plant sale this Saturday. So if you need plants, just start wandering around there everywhere.
The Farmers
of America, too.
Yes. Parents of Society.
Councilmember Hanson.
Ferndale Chambers, Chelsea Ebert fundraiser is Friday, May 13th. A little bit of bad planning on that date, but 5 o'clock is a place to be. A great charity organization, and great event. And anybody that's ever been to it knows that it's
followed by the golf tournament on Saturday.
And the golf tournament on Saturday, 11 o'clock, shotgun
City
start.
Very good. Yeah. Other council members, Councilmember Goodrich.
Just a little note. The Pioneer Park tour season is going to be starting here. Normally we start on the 15th. That's a Sunday. And we don't do tours on Monday. So we're thinking about just waiting until the 17th and starting the tours on the 17th. But we haven't met yet to officially decide that. But we'll be going starting around the 15th to the 17th and going through Labor Day.
Clue me in when that's an official decision.
Yeah, I'll find out for sure. If you've never taken a tour of Pioneer Park, I would really recommend it. It takes about 45 minutes to an hour to go through all the cabins, but you really get a better feel for what the Heritage Society and Old Settlers have accomplished there and done. When you start really looking at what's inside each cabin and things. The educational program, I believe, is going on next week or now?
It's going on right now.
It's this weekend.
This week it starts. I know last year they had over 800 kids come through the educational program that's done there. This year they said the number is going to be down, but I don't know what it's down to. I think there's some schools that are just not doing it this year.
Yeah, it's about money and busing kids.
Yeah.
Pioneer Park.
Any other council members' reports? Very good. Community Development Director.
So we're working with Pioneer Montessori and the Boys and Girls Club. There was an anonymous donation associated with the library for wetland signage. So they've been working with one of our interns who did some really cool paintings that we're going to put on an interpretive sign that's likely going to be placed on or around May 21st. But on May 17th, Pioneer and Boys and Girls Club are likely going to be having an event where they're going to be doing cement casts of animal tracks and leaves and other things that are then going to be hid around the civic campus for people to go and find and learn more about nature.
Very good. Public Works. Treasurer.
Nothing.
Very good. Communications Officer.
Since the treasurer didn't mention it, I'm sure you all saw the announcement that we received for the 12th year running a clean bill of financial health from the state auditor.
Thank you, Mark.
And that is a credit to our team.
And our city clerk.
I got two more. Sorry.
LTAC. You can move faster there.
LTAC met. Thank you. And you will be seeing that at the next committees for the next round, hopefully the final round, to provide there aren't any surprises. And then, of course, like I was going to get to this without mentioning the Star Park, groundbreaking is May 12th. You all got the email, and I hope to see you all there.
Very good. And City Clerk, Susan Dunn.
Thank you.
Very good. I would entertain a motion to dismiss. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.